Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
I'm Arthur.
And we are coming at you with a really interesting review this week. We were very, very fortunate to receive a screener of an upcoming release from the lovely team over at VVS.
Yeah, thank you very
much. Thank you so, so much, you guys. They were kind enough to send us over a screener of a film being released on May 8th, which, to be fair, is when you'll be hearing this episode anyway, but yes, we're recording it a little bit ahead of time for a new Canadian supernatural thriller, which feels like it's just scratching the surface of what this film is.
Oh, yeah.
Called At the Place of Ghosts. This is an Indigenous film that, at base level, follows two brothers who are reunited after years of estrangement when they are both essentially stalked by a malevolent entity of some sort, and they need to come back together to destroy this malevolent spirit that is haunting them before it consumes and destroys them entirely.
Exactly. As the, I think it was, right. So as one of the producers, Mark Tetreault, said, and I think this describes the movie really, really well.
Yeah.
It is a drama wrapped up in a ghost story that is wrapped back up into a drama again.
That is exactly correct.
Yes.
The way that this film plays with time and the idea of non-linear timelines for the characters, exactly. The way that it plays with the juxtaposition between past, present, and future state of different people throughout the course of their lives, and obviously very deeply explores a lot of trauma, of course, that affects particularly the lead characters, who are the two brothers. There was so much going on in this movie, so I feel like this is going to take us a while to get through to a degree.
There's so much, like, you really have to watch it because it was seriously very good. This it was great, incredible. Very atmospheric, very, I guess, to say metaphysical in a sense, you know what I mean?
It's very emotional.
Very emotional as well.
I'm going to give a little bit of, like, I guess, info here and there as we go. I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but once we kind of get into deeper things, I'm going to talk a little bit about some other stuff before the end of the episode that really kind of falls into place timely with the release of this film being in the month of May and certain days that are observed here in Canada with regards to the Indigenous peoples and past traumas and all sorts of other really impressive and really important movements here. And I have some recommendations for places and info that you can check out. Yes, I will link them in show notes and all that jazz for everybody to take a look at. Even if you would just like to, if you're from an area that, you know, you just don't hear very much about this stuff, if you would even just like to read about things and educate yourself, I think that's something that is really important and, you know, can be an interesting sort of thing for someone to learn about who's maybe not familiar.
Exactly. So this movie has a lot of themes in it, like we said.
Yeah.
It is very interesting. It is beautifully shot.
God.
It is just very interesting the way that you experience the movie because it is, like Megan was just mentioning, non-linear time.
Very much.
Things that kind of like time folds on itself essentially in this movie, right? So anyways, we're going to go through it. There's a lot to go through. Definitely watch this movie if you want to better understand it, right?
Let me read very brief IMDb synopsis.
Yes.
We can do a little bit of cast. We can do first thoughts before we do get into some slightly more spoilery stuff. I don't think we'll go too heavy.
No, we never do.
Because honestly, this is again one of those cases, and this keeps happening. I know we just talked about it with Hokum, but if we get too far into the story, we're going to give away the entire film. And it's not the type of film that you should do that with. You genuinely should watch it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is also not the kind of horror podcast that we are, that we just
give away
everything.
Every single aspect.
Yeah, exactly.
No. In talking about our favorites, do we cover certain points and do we give spoilers? Yes, that's why we give a warning ahead of time. But we don't necessarily delve so very deeply into every element and every plot point. So,
tell me, what is the IMDb synopsis, if it's good this time or not? Because I think ours is pretty good.
It's not terrible. Okay. It's very similar, kind of, to be fair, to what I said, because it's very surface level. Siblings, Mysel and Adel, who were close as children, but trauma from their upbringing has caused them to drift apart as adults. When they're both haunted by a malevolent spirit of bones and rot, the siblings are forced to reunite.
Okay.
So it's like it's surface level, but it's also, you know, kind of at the base level, that is what the movie is about.
Yes, exactly.
So the film is written and directed by a filmmaker named Breton Hannon. Hannum, excuse me, who is a Canadian Indigenous filmmaker. They have made a number of films in the past and have been quite heavily lauded for the films that they've made, particularly a film called Wildhood, I believe, that came out in 2021.
Yeah, it has a bunch of nominations.
Which is not horror, so it's not really something that we would cover on the pod, but it's still something that would be worth checking out. And this one as well, really, wow. Wow. This one has so much going on with it that Bretton Hannum is obviously a really impressive filmmaker. So that's very cool. And largely cast-wise, there aren't too many characters in the film. There are some like side characters who you do see. But base level, I would say, obviously, Mysel and Annel are the two core characters in the film. So Mysel is played by Blake Alec Miranda, who, according to what I was reading in the press pack, is not only an actor and an activist, but also someone who's finishing his, I believe, PhD in neuroscience.
What?
And presenting their dissertation. It's an incredibly impressive human being. That's awesome.
Defend that dissertation.
I think per the press pack, the defense was supposed to be happening this spring of 2026. Amazing. So that's incredible.
All right.
The character of Annel is played by Forrest Goodluck, who I think largely a lot of folks will know as the character in The Revenant who plays Leonardo DiCaprio's son. Yes, I'm talking about the movie with the bear.
Yes, the bear movie.
It's the bear movie. That's what we all take away from that film, let's be real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. He got his start or his bigger break in that film and has steadily been working since then. We have the character of, my God, not everybody's actually listed in this. Anyway, it's the character of Grace, who is Annel's daughter, who's played by Ainsley Cope. And there's another version of her played by Pamela Matthews. Those are two different people. And then the character of their father, the two brothers, is played by Glenn Gould, who's never officially, I don't think, named in the film either. And then, like I said, there are other side characters as well who do pop up from time to time. So, yeah, base level, that's kind of what it is. So should we talk about a little bit about first impressions of the movie
100%.
Before we get into things? Okay, because I really want to hear your thoughts because we were extremely quiet while we were watching this movie.
Yeah, this is not one of those that you kind of like sit and discuss and talk. We watched it at home, obviously, because we had a screener and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't one of those that like, you know, we were sitting and talking because there's, you know, I'm not saying it's a convoluted film, not at all, but there's things that you need to understand.
You need to pay attention.
You need to pay attention essentially to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because it is also very interesting.
Yes.
And there's backstory that is covered by showing what's happening with things that are happening in the past and in the present and in the future. You know what I mean? So it's not not told essentially. So you gotta understand what's going on. Also, part of the movie is narrated in the
So this particular, and again, for people who are not familiar, this particular film it takes place and is representative of the Mi'kmaq people.
Yes.
They're an indigenous people who largely reside in Canada, specifically in the Atlantic Canadian provinces. So Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland and Labrador, and then there is a little bit of a trickle, it seems, down into Maine as well in the States. So there's a little bit of a mix. This is specifically a Mi'kmaq-specific story, and the film utilizes a mix of obviously English, but also Mi'kmaq-specific. Lead that dialect specifically is spoken very frequently throughout the course of the film as well.
Exactly. That's it. So it's one of those that, again, you know, you have to pay attention because there are subtitles sometimes and they convey a very important story.
Just because that's it. I know a lot of people aren't necessarily aware, but there are different groups of Indigenous peoples in multiple places across North America who do have different dialects and tribes have different names.
Mm-hmm.
So
there you go. Yeah. Makes sense. All right. So what were your first impressions of the movie?
Oh, I'm going first. Jesus. Okay. Yes. I never go first. You're
supposed to be ready, Megan.
Sorry. No, I'm ready. Oh, I'm ready.
Oh, boy.
I loved this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of had a feeling I was going to. When we first saw a trailer for this and some promotional sort of stuff coming out, this premiered at TIFF. Last year, at the Toronto International Film Festival, and then was picked up, obviously, for distribution and is now receiving its official theatrical release, which is fantastic. I kind of assumed that I would like to, I would enjoy it going into it just because it seemed like a really interesting story and the mm-hmm. style of it was very intriguing. And I was really curious about what the story would be. And now that we've watched it, I can say that I was really impressed with this film. There are so many layers to the narrative that are not shoved in your face. They are left to interpretation. It is such a great exploration of Indigenous culture, trauma, traditions, the things that Indigenous people have experienced in the past, largely due to colonization and the fallout from all of that and how that follows generationally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is beautifully shot. It is beautifully acted. The two leads were fantastic, I thought. And it was weirdly a film in which I appreciated the sort of nonlinear aspect of it. Sometimes when you're watching a movie that is super convoluted, it really takes you out of the story.
Yeah, because you're thinking too much
absolutely,
about it.
Absolutely, and you have such a difficult time following mm-hmm. it. That was not the case with this film. I was intrigued the entire way through. Mooncake's now a character who exists on this podcast.
Every single time.
Like a fucking mythological creature of some sort. God, he's pain.
Jesus.
Yeah, sorry. Where was I? So just, I think that everything to sort of do with it from start to finish, it is a slow burn
yes.
in its own way, but I was never bored with it.
No,
I was
no, not
never
at all. Not
disinterested.
At all.
Nothing ever happened to really take me out of the film. There's a little bit of dodgy CG during one specific scene in the movie with some animals that were CG. But other than that, but all the rest of the effects looked incredible, I thought, as well. So there's no time that I ever felt like I wasn't in the story, that I wasn't experiencing it along with Meisel and Adel, and I wasn't kind of just like there with them sort of experiencing what they had experienced, which was very interesting to sit through and obviously very sad. And I teared up multiple times, but ignore me because I'm just like a big crybaby most of the time, but it was hard not to. So, yeah, I don't know. I really don't have anything bad to say about this film. Like, I don't have anything negative about it.
We don't have to find bad things.
No, that's it.
It
was so excellently done and put together. I'm so impressed by Brett and Hannum and how mm-hmm. they went about presenting this story as an exploration of their culture, as an exploration of queer culture in Indigenous
yes.
communities as well, because that's a big theme throughout the course of the film as well, that I thought was, again, beautifully explored in terms of the way that different generations react to these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. It was so beautifully shot. It's obviously shot in a beautiful location. They shot it in Nova Scotia near Halifax, which is stunning. If you ever get a chance to go to those areas, they're so beautiful and the people are lovely. So it's just like nice places to go. Everybody in Atlantic Canada is like, wow, thanks, Megan. but yeah, I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, well, fuck, you took everything that I wanted to say. You literally covered everything. So, you know what, guys? Whatever she said, Jets, those are my thoughts, basically. Christ.
Sorry, do you have anything to add?
You said everything.
I know. You can just say you agree with certain things.
I agree with, what's your, what, how many digs? Give me the digs.
I'm high on this.
You're
high? Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm at like a 9.
Wow.
This was an excellently made film. And as I said, I don't know, ask me to find like the negative in it. I'm not. There's a lot of difficult subject matter that it covers, which is its own thing. So, I mean, trigger warning for that. But outside of that, no, this was an excellently made film.
All right.
Genuinely.
Okay. Okay, cool. I mean, look, like you just said, like Megan just said, everything about it from every point that she mentioned is amazing. It's beautiful, beautiful location. Cinematography is incredible. There were some shots that kind of fucked my mind and I was like, wait a minute,
what's happening?
I have to like rearrange my brain
yep.
to understand what I'm looking at.
Cinematography was done by a cinematographer named Guy Godfrey, who's worked on apparently like that's it multiple different Canadian projects, which is
right.
wonderful. So yeah, wow, well done.
Yeah, that's it. It's beautiful. I think the location that they were in was absolutely amazing. Yes, you know, we know it's shot in Nova Scotia close to Halifax,
yeah.
whatever, but most of the time, the movie is spent literally in the middle of a forest. I have no idea how they did it. All the technical complications that they had to go with this.
Oh, I can only imagine.
In the press bag, they were saying that they had to deal with the cicadas just screaming forever. And the sound guys were probably just crying themselves to sleep with this.
I can't even imagine the sound mixers who had to do all the post-production work on this. Like, kudos to you guys, because holy shit, this must have been hard to do.
It was beautiful. So, like, a lot of it happens along a river and then in the forest and everything. They found absolutely beautiful locations.
Oh, my God.
Everything of it is very good and great. I appreciated the fact that some parts of the story, like the LGBTQ part, you know, and some of the traumas that both brothers experienced based on what they've done is not shoved in your face. You know, it's
no,
not
you get
like,
to figure it out.
This
that
is what happened.
Yeah.
It's like,
there's no dialogue to be like, I'm queer and I identify as the, like, okay.
So, no, it's, you know, you don't need that. First of all, second of all, it doesn't matter. And third of all, you know, it's just, it's the movie explains enough and shows you enough. To understand what's going on.
You gather the context.
What I mean? Exactly, yeah. And it's not like it plays some kind of major pivotal role in this. That's just how one of the characters is. It doesn't matter.
It does.
Oh, okay, fine. Yes, in the sense of like how one of the main things that this movie is about develops. Sure.
Yes.
There is a big impact in that.
But in the sense of anybody else like in present treating it as a negative thing?
No, not at all.
Obviously
that's
not.
So all of that, yes, it's... It was amazing. I'm not surprised that it was nominated for a bunch of things already, you know, and that it did really well at TIFF. It is atmospheric. I enjoyed the subtle horror elements to it,
me too.
Like there were a couple of jump scares that got me.
Yeah, there were a couple, like especially early on, that I was like, oh, God.
Yeah. That's it. So those were very, very well done. Yeah. I enjoyed this movie a lot.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I was hoping it was a little bit more horror, but then again, you know, it doesn't really take away anything from the movie itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say I'm close to like, I'm like at an 8 for sure.
Yeah.
Like a solid 8, essentially. It's a beautiful movie from every angle, essentially.
Yeah.
From the technical aspect of the storytelling to everything that's going on in it.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's give a little bit of a spoiler warning. We can get into maybe more detailed side of things about the plot and kind of, you know, a little bit about what happens throughout the course of the film and some of our favorite things about it.
Yeah, exactly. Favorite things, we're not going to spoil
too much.
We're not
going to go into
like
too
that.
Much detail for spoiling. Don't,
yeah,
don't
exactly.
Believe. Yeah.
By the way, I feel like I keep saying it every episode, but thank you very, very much for everyone who rates the podcast on every platform.
Rating,
it helps
reviews.
So much.
That's wonderful. Gary is digging a grave in your honor as we speak.
That's right.
And now we need him to get over here so he can do the fucking spoiler warning.
Oh my God. Be nice to Gary.
You've been warned. Spoilers ahead.
Thanks, Gary. Okay, so as mentioned at the beginning, essentially the story follows Misal and Anil, his little brother. When they are coming back together as adults, they haven't really seen each other.
It's been almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years since Misal left the community that they grew up in and left to move to the city and start their own life and, you know, do their own thing basically and kind of separate themselves from the trauma that they experienced as young people. Their father was an abusive alcoholic and, you know, obviously that led to a ton of different horrible things that they experienced as children and leads to one very particular kind of inciting incident for both of them as kids that you only discover later on in the film.
That and created now, that separation. And
that creates
them,
the separation. That's it. Like the sort of, that's it. Like the sort of disconnect between them and the estrangement that it winds up causing. Now we're coming back almost two decades later when Misal, even in the city, is approached or, I guess, stalked by some sort of malevolent entity and spirit that is basically slowly starts to poison him from the inside out. And so he realizes what it is, that it has to do with his past. He returns to the community, reunites with Anil, and then the two of them essentially realize that this is happening to both of them, and they decide to go on a quest of sorts, essentially, to stop this spirit and destroy it once and for all before, obviously, it's too late and the malevolence basically, as mentioned, like, consumes them from the inside out.
Exactly, because it is almost like it's poisoning them, it's haunting them.
There are so many different ways that you can interpret the level of poisoning that's happening. It's physically happening to them, but is it also something that if you ignored the supernatural element, is it something where the trauma of their past can affect them in the present so they could become who, like the monster that they tried to run from as children? Like there are so many.
It affects them emotionally, it affects some of the alternate, I guess, timelines that happened to them, because like we said, they do get reunited and they have to go into this forest, mm-hmm. essentially, that is technically considered, and correct me if I'm wrong here from what I understood, is in this culture is considered the place for afterlife, essentially, right?
Which is why along the way they encounter these different versions of themselves and other people in their lives, but not the way that they know them currently necessarily. Past forms, some present, but also future state.
Exactly.
In some cases as well. And so they're able to, and this is like, they encounter ancestors of theirs while they're there who help them along their journey and like the quest that they're on in order to be able to finish this. And it's just fascinating to see all of the different types. Particularly, I found the ancestors were so interesting to me. You know, like they have a great-great-grandfather who they encounter. There is another situation in which they encounter who I can only imagine is a female ancestor of theirs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Well,
that makes sense, yeah.
Who they do encounter, and you can tell it's like almost set during a different time period when the British invasion happened.
Exactly, during the invasion.
In Canada, essentially.
Hundreds of years ago.
Correct, and Indigenous people were being slaughtered on a regular basis by British soldiers, and all of those things were happening, and there are also explorations even in those past tense characters, those ancestral characters of queerness and the level of taboo that would have had at the time, even though per everything that I've read about, the Mi'kmaq people in general have a much more just overarching gender fluidity within mm-hmm. their culture.
It's called Two Spirits.
Correct. Yeah. So, and this is something that kind of like flows across multiple different Indigenous communities. Basically, you have, men, women, and two-spirited people. Two-spirited people are people who don't necessarily identify as one gender in particular. There's a lot of gender fluidity within multiple different Indigenous communities, and Mi'kmaq are definitely a people that fall into mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. sort of side of the spectrum. And so they're just, it's just much more open. And before they were repressed during colonial invasions, they were a people that just kind of functioned in that way, I think very naturally, without much thought to very specific gender roles.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And then a lot of things happen to sway a lot of that, which is how you get all this generational trauma, which is like wild, but that's pretty much what happens. So yeah, so it's just so interesting to see the people that they encounter along their way, people that they know, but people that they've never met, of course, for one reason or another, and kind of the different interactions with them, the people who help them along the way, and them, also the two of them coming to terms with what happened to them as children, to what they experienced, to the sort of major traumatic event that kind of caused mm-hmm. the estrangement between the two of them, and how working together in order to fix things is kind of what sort of ties them back together.
Yeah, what brings them together, exactly.
And helps them start on, hopefully anyway, what will be like a journey towards healing.
That's it, exactly. So this amazing movie doesn't really have a tidy end.
No.
Because I think it was a director who said that they don't believe in happy endings.
No.
Essentially, right? There's no like real such thing as happy endings. And I very much agree with that statement.
We live in a gray area.
First of all, right? Yes. Second of all, a lot of movies are just kind of like two happy endings and it's always the same. And I'm like, sometimes I just root for the villain. I'm like, come on, man, change it up. Change it up. I've seen 1,000 movies and it's always happy ending for everyone. Anyways, they don't believe in happy endings. They believe in a start to something that could be happy, right? So it's not a happy ending. It's hopeful, it is start of something new, but is not necessarily happy. It could go in every direction, but like Megan just said, it is a hopeful new beginning as opposed to a happy ending.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's definitely something that I think is pretty well demonstrated by the end of the film 100%. As well. That's, it's very clear that that's basically where we're headed, which is good because like I wouldn't have wanted it to end with like a horrible, miserable ending.
No.
With everything else, like there's a lot of heavy stuff in this film, and with everything else, I think I would have been like, oh my God.
Yeah. Jesus. So this is actually one of the things that I enjoyed, I guess, the most about this is...
that little bit of ambiguity that it has.
Oh, even before I get to that, it's what you were talking about before. It's the spirits or entities or whatever it is that they meet when they're traveling in the forest, which is kind of like, once they go deeper into the forest, they are in this land that is also space-time that folds into itself, that has different timelines, because like we said in the beginning, it's not linear. They meet some people in the past, then it's some people in a little bit closer to their past, but then it goes back again, then it goes in the future, then it's kind of present, but then it also goes in the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's all folded together because there's no real time. No.
But it's incredibly, really, Brett and Hannah wrote this brilliantly because there was never a time where I was like, what the fuck is going on?
No, absolutely not.
It was very clear.
It was very clear, and one of the things that I really loved about this is, I mean, first of all, I'm kind of like a sucker for time loop stuff in general.
Yeah, you're a big fan of that.
but it's the way that they were able to interact with those characters from the past, future, or whatever it is, and were able actually to get something physical from there.
Yeah.
You know, so like they get fed. Yeah. Right? They have some interaction. Someone gives them some kind of a weapon or something to help them along the journey and whatever it is. That's
medicine.
Yeah. And that is so smart and amazing because a lot of the times, you know, like it's like, oh, you can't interact with your past self. If you touch each other, you're going to explode or whatever it is. I mean, if we're talking about the paradoxes that exist in time travel, but in this case, it's not really time travel.
No,
it's
not really.
More of time bending on itself. Anyways, whatever. Now, that's what I'm talking about. It's the metaphysical aspect of things that I really enjoyed about this movie because I was not expecting it at all. And it was very well done, like you just mentioned. So that's definitely one of my number one things.
It's seamless.
It's seamless. It is smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably, I mean, God, there, like I said, I basically liked everything about this. So I think probably first things would probably be the relationship between Misel and Anil.
Yes.
Just in general. I mean, the chemistry between the actors was pretty phenomenal, but just their relationship themselves felt so realistic. They're both very different people. Misel is someone who removed themselves from like a bit of a more sheltered lifestyle and community and kind of went to the city and interacted with other people and made their own way in the world a little bit, you know, and has been trying to, but also in that same way has been trying to shut themselves off from what they had experienced as a child. Whereas Anil is someone who remained in the community and through that has, I guess, a bit more of like a little bit more of a pessimistic attitude towards certain things. He feels more that he was abandoned by his sibling.
He is the little brother.
Correct. Yeah, that's it. Like he feels more that you have a little brother. So, you know, there you go. He feels more that he was abandoned by his sibling and that he never had the opportunity to also work through any of that because he was essentially left on his own as a fairly young person by the one person that he trusted the most, right, in the world. So there's a lot of kind of anger and sort of negativity for him to work through, but none of it ever feels between either of them like it's unrealistic. No one is insane or over the top with the like level of frustration that they have about anything. Nobody overacts in any capacity. It's not overdramatic. Not at all. They have very realistic conversations about it. And I really, really appreciated that. I thought like the writing was phenomenal between the two of them. But then just the way that the characters interacted with each other, I really, really liked.
I want to echo this because not that I was expecting it, because when you start watching the movie, you kind of understand that it's those things are probably not going to happen. But I really love the fact that there was no of that stupid thing that always happens in movies that all it takes is to have a small conversation to fix a situation.
Oh, yeah.
And people just run away into the forest. You know what I mean? And then it creates a whole fucking drama thing.
No, there's more.
There was none of that because when times were difficult or whatever it is, they either put it aside and solved it and figured it out, or they actually spoke about it.
Yes.
Instead of running away and being mad at each other. You know what I mean? So I actually appreciate that because I think that is smarter writing.
Yes.
To create tension and situations that happen throughout the movie, as opposed to creating kind of like a, you know, like a, what is it? Not a plug, but a trope.
Yeah.
Essentially to be like, oh, well, I'm just not going to tell you anything and run away. And yeah, this is going to be the problem in the movie.
I mean, it's something, you know, you see people who read a lot of romance complain nowadays about the miscommunication trope. Yes. And how that is really fucking annoying. And it is most of the time. And that's something that, you know, that's it, that I think transfers into other genres. Right. And it's just irritating to see that after a while. So with that in mind, yeah, I agree. I think it's really good that we don't have any of that bullshit to deal with in this. And I appreciate it.
Exactly. I would say for me, I don't know why I'm going more into the technical aspect of things. Mm-hmm. I guess there's a lot of things that...
Probably because you know I'm going to cover all story.
Yes, exactly. Things, so yeah. I'm just going to, you know, let you have your talk with that and everything. I don't know what it is about, I guess, the location that they've done or the location scouting or the way that things are shot and everything. It looked not easy to do those things because they're like... They're not in the forest and like a little clearing, you know, and it's like a road that is a little bit traveled and it's flat, whatever it is. No, man, they're in a forest.
They're in the woods.
They're in the woods. They're climbing rocks. They are going through creeks.
Yep.
They're swimming in a freaking river.
Yeah.
You know, they encounter wolves.
Yeah.
There's so much going on, and creating that on a technical aspect in terms of the shooting, the acting that they had to do, the location that they had to find and everything. Can you imagine? When they're at the cave, getting all the equipment there.
No, thank you.
Like, that is wild.
Yeah.
So the technical aspect that is required, or that was required to shoot this movie, mm-hmm. and the way that it was shot, because it wasn't, like, spotty or whatever it is, it was absolutely stunning.
No, it's so beautifully shot.
I think that just deserves a praise in itself. No, you know what true. I mean?
It deserves a lot of accolades. Like we said, you know, the... When you think about for 1 minute about all the work that must have gone into it and then what the final product actually looks mm-hmm. like, it's so impressive.
It's absolutely impressive. Like, I would rewatch this movie just for the technical aspect of things, just to kind of mm-hmm. figure out what's going on. I really hope they kind of, I don't know, release a DVD, Blu-ray of it, whatever it is, with the director's commentary, something like this. I would love to hear their thoughts about it.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
I agree. Brett and Hannah, if you want to come and talk to us on the podcast, you can do that too. That would be fabulous. Okay. I would say next thing for me would actually be pretty much the entire atmosphere mm-hmm. of the film itself.
Yes.
It is so good at towing that line between falling into that's it, like a full like jump scary horror movie and leaning more into the sort of very heavy atmosphere, one, because of what the characters are experiencing and have experienced, and two, because of what is haunting them right now,
right.
essentially. And of course, obviously, as the story progresses and you find out what exactly it is that's haunting them and why this is happening, that's something that I think adds to the atmosphere mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. more, which I really loved. And just like all of it together, the obviously, like, you know, you'd mentioned the location and everything, and I think that even the way that they chose to film multiple different scenes within the forest like that, I mean, like, you know, there's something kind of unsettling sometimes about people being isolated in a place like this, which I think definitely lends itself well to the atmosphere. And then couple that with the moments of genuine, like, haunting and horror that occur throughout the course of the story. And it's just like, it has this beautiful sort of like haunting atmosphere that continues almost from the, like the first scene of the film.
Oh yeah.
That kind of runs all the way through.
Yeah. This movie starts, man. It doesn't wait.
No, it doesn't. It does not wait for anything. And then runs through and has like this continuation all the way up until I would say basically like one of the final scenes of the film where mm-hmm. you start to get a little bit of levity injected in because of what's able to be accomplished for the characters. And I really loved just kind of like the through line of all of it.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's really well done.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, it is very congruent, I guess is the word for it.
Sure. Yeah.
In how everything happens and the way that story is written and just the atmosphere that you get, mm-hmm. you know, it's very smart. I also really liked some of the future characters that appear.
Yes.
That was so cool.
I love
the way that they displayed it, you know, or showed it, whatever.
There was also a, yeah, there's a really cool set piece.
Yes.
In the woods that pops up that's like a futuristic almost looking cabin in a way. Mm-hmm. I loved that. The
I know,
minute
right?
it showed up, I was like, oh, this is cool.
This is really cool. There's like a tree in the middle, but it's not too crazy.
Oh, it looked fascinating. Yeah. I really liked that.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yep.
I enjoyed it a lot. You go again.
Okay. I think
you have a lot of good things to say. Go
again. Yeah, I know. It's fine. I think that one of the last things, I did bring this up earlier, but one of the other things that I did really enjoy as well was the exploration of queerness within Indigenous communities. Mm-hmm. The character of Mysel, as I mentioned earlier, is a queer character. They identify as Two-Spirit and they use they-them pronouns. And that is something that different generations will react to differently, and you're given a really good lens of sorts and a look into that in the film. And as mentioned, that's it. Nothing's really thrown in your face, but it's incredibly easy to infer from the context that we're provided with what their father reacts to when they're children and everything, and why he is the way that he is about his oldest child and everything, and sort of like what Mysel sort of experiences as a kid, which is atrocious. It's weird to say it was like one of my favorite things, but it's because
it's something that touched you,
it
right?
It was just very impactful.
Yes, impactful.
I think overall it had like an effect on me while I was watching the film. And I think that it was just a great overall kind of explanation and exploration of queerness within Indigenous communities as well. And how unfortunately due to, again, the level of past generations in any culture, regardless of race, of gender norms, and what is presented to people as what is okay and not okay for a made-up reason, basically, in society, how these things transfer between generations and are just cycles that are incredibly difficult to break to this day.
Yeah, and to be fair, the only kind of like, I guess, negative thing that happened with this was from the father's perspective.
Correct. Yeah.
No one else
and there's definitely
mentioned or really cared about any kind of
but it's
because
also,
that's the whole thing, right? It's two-spirited people that has been in the culture forever. So
yes.
It doesn't matter.
But the thing is that what makes sense about the perspective of like the father's character, for instance, we don't learn very much about him necessarily, but also one can imagine or infer from context that this is a man who was more than likely sent to a residential school as a child, which means he was ripped away from his parents. He was sent to a school and forced on probably Catholicism or whatever, a mainstream Christian religion, essentially, and was brought up in a space that heavily promoted gender norms and like the man is a man and the woman is a woman and this is how everything functions, and it's like fake sort of like it's like all this misogyny and machismo that's like heaped onto these kids in these schools by the white people who are teaching them. And so you can see how their father is a fucking monster, but he's a product of the environment that he was brought up in.
You know what? I think you're partially right with this, but I think it even goes further in this because we saw, and they mentioned it in the movie, the great-great-grandfather who was Old Holy Joe.
Holy Joe.
Right? So he was called Old Holy Joe because he essentially made handmade.
He wore a very large
large cross, right? So I think that's actually where it stemmed from, is that he was converted, I guess, if you want to call it, back in a long time ago. And then, you know, it went to his grandfather and then it went to their father.
Yes.
Essentially. And this is kind of like how it follows.
That's exactly what it is, right? Because you pointed
it out. So it's not just
kind
of like
it,
those
like,
things, the schools and whatever. It is.
Like you're listening to him. You're listening to him like pray to God and you're like, that's weird. Like he's, you know, using like a Christian prayer basically.
Yeah.
And you were like, huh, odd. And I was like, yeah, because he would have been converted.
Yeah. That's it.
Whether he wanted to be or not, right? Like, that's what would have happened.
I agree. Yeah. Speaking of core aspects of the movie,
I guess,
there is, well, one of my third things that I really enjoyed, because like we said, there's a lot of things about it, but I just want to mention something that is a little bit more than, you know, this movie was beautiful, which it was. It is the core through line, I guess, of the culture that is interwoven into the movie because mm-hmm. I get that's kind of like the whole basis of it, right?
Yes.
It is not in your face, like I mentioned before. It just...
It exists.
It exists, but it also, it opens that lens that you won't really see in general. You know what I mean? You kind of get to see how they lived in the past, how they live now. I feel mm-hmm. like a lot of people have some kind of weird predisposition perception. Or perception of how yeah. people live now. No, they have a beautiful house.
Yeah,
you course. Know, there is... Anyways, whatever. So, like, it's that lens that is cast and you can actually see what's happening now, mm-hmm. I would say, in those communities and the fact that they, you know, have... new things, but also still kept a lot of the old things.
They adhere to
a lot of the traditions and stuff. And it kind of mixes really well together in that sense, you know? So like that kind of like through line and that beautiful mix of things really casts a lens and it makes you pay attention because it is very interesting to see this. You know what I mean?
It's fascinating to learn about just other cultures and things around us in general.
That's
particularly,
it exactly.
you know, in our case, this is a culture that's very close to home to us as well. So it's fascinating to learn about these things in general. And I know that folks who are in maybe other parts of the world outside of North America, you don't always necessarily have as much exposure, I'm thinking of Europe right now, as much exposure to indigenous communities per se in the same way. So it's just something that people aren't necessarily as aware of, right?
I agree. And it is something that, so it is technically a European co-production as well. And one of the producers, I believe, was Belgian.
Yes.
Anna Elbom.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Right. That's it. So like what we've learned from, you know, the information that we've got mm-hmm. is that she was very interested and attached to this movie because, like you were just mentioning, a lot of those indigenous cultures in Europe...
Well, they don't really have any.
They don't really have any, or they're very kind of like non-existent anymore. You know what I mean? Just because it's such a much older country and stuff. And it is very interesting to see and perceive that and keep it alive mm-hmm. in North America, essentially.
Yes.
You know?
Because we do still have thriving communities here, and hopefully there will continue to be for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess partially leads me into my informative portion of the episode to speak about this again, if people just like maybe aren't necessarily very aware of this. Now, I know, for instance, something that's pretty widely broadcast in the U.S., for instance, is that the month of May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Okay, yeah.
So that is a specific month. It's observed officially across the country, essentially, and it celebrates the contributions and influence of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and other Pacific Islanders, essentially, in America. So that's something that is what that happens in the States specifically throughout the month of May. Now, I know officially, technically, in Canada, in September, on September 30th, we have the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation, mm-hmm. which is also known as Orange Shirt Day, which is an official day across the country in which we observe and acknowledge the atrocities committed against Indigenous communities across the country, particularly due to things like I mentioned earlier, the residential school system and everything that happened to people. Like, if I get into it too much, I'm going to cry. So I would say go look that up. That is the official day. However, the month of May also has two other pretty important days that fall within Indigenous heritage specifically. So the day that we are recording this episode, which is May 5th,
right,
is commonly referred to as Red Dress Day. This is an annual commemorative day that takes place that, again, is observed across the country. It is a national day of remembrance and of activism, essentially,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
honors the lives of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and two-spirited people across the country.
Okay.
This day started as an art installation project in 2010. It was created by a Mitzi or another Indigenous community in Canada mm-hmm. and in the U.S., named Jamie Black. This artist created essentially an art installation of empty red dresses that were meant to symbolize the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, particularly, but also two-spirited people, because the entire point of seeing the empty red dress is that it reminds you that there are people who are not here mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. This has become officially, nationally, a recognized day of awareness and of activism. So that's something that they have causes which you can donate to. There's a lot of information available through the, I believe, Amnesty International website. So we'll link that in the show notes if ever you are curious to read more about it, or if you would like to donate for any reason, you're more than welcome to. I have in the past. I have this year.
Nice.
I do from time to time.
Yeah.
If you can, wonderful. If not, if you would just like to learn about some of it, you can definitely do so there. And then in that same vein, next week on May 14th is Moosehide Campaign Day. So the Moosehide Campaign was a movement that began as sort of a grassroots movement of sorts out in British Columbia. It is a movement specifically that is meant to engage men and boys to help end violence towards women and children in Indigenous communities across the country as well. This is also a cause that you can donate to at any given time. And I believe that they only ship this in Canada. However, there's also the possibility to buy moose hide pins, which are basically like small leather pins that can be shipped. And you can choose to wear those in order to support the campaign as well. And that's it. Make a donation of any amount, pretty much. So these are just things that are interesting for people to be aware of. I know we talk about truth and reconciliation, and it's obviously very important, but that day tends to be a little bit more performative on certain sides of things people. And it's like the only day that a lot of people choose to acknowledge, but there are a lot of other days that take place throughout the course of the year to honor Indigenous communities and to help raise awareness
for them as well. Look, I heard a little bit about Red Dress Day.
Yeah.
Not much. I feel like it's not publicized enough, but I had no idea where it came from. And that is super interesting that it was from an art installation that it became such a much bigger thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was something that had made a huge impact. There is still a march, if I'm not mistaken, that takes place on May 5th as well. And people wear red
of course,
to honor all of the people who are no longer around. So yeah.
Wow.
So that's just a little bit of information. Anyway, we will link a couple of different sites in the show notes if you guys want to check that out. If you would like to read about things, just because you're curious, if you would like to donate, wonderful. Nobody's forcing you to, but you do have that option as well. So that's just something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Oh, and on that same note, I have a few recommendations of books for anybody who's curious to check out a little bit more Indigenous literature, possibly from Canadian authors.
Oh, cool. Are they horror books?
A couple of them are.
Okay,
A couple of, technically a couple of them aren't, but they're real life horrors.
That's fine. Well.
So my first one would be Highway of Tears by Jessica McDermid. This one's a nonfiction book specifically to do with the Highway of Tears, which is a major highway that runs throughout particularly throughout BC, and has become well known, unfortunately, for a lot of people who go missing along its stretch. And there are a ton of unsolved missing persons cases from the area, particularly of Indigenous people. And so that's something that she explores pretty heavily throughout the course of the book. So it's really rough, but it gives you a ton of backstory about a lot of these different cases, and also just the movement itself to identify and find these people who have disappeared. Mm-hmm. That's one. There's a book called Five Little Indians by Michelle Good, it's a fictional book, but it's very much based on real events. And it's about five kids who have basically become stuck in the residential school system in BC and kind of escape in all of the things that happen to them the older that they get. There's a lot of really rough stuff in it, but it's extremely well written, and there are a lot of good stories within it as well. And then on the more, I guess, horror side of things, would be a novel called Bad Cree by Jessica Johns, which is a partial like supernatural haunting kind of story. I think it might lean maybe a little bit towards the movie that we're talking about, At the Place of Ghosts, to an extent, not because of the subject matter, but because of like the sort of mysticism culturally that exists within the story. That's one. And then last one that I will say that fully, I think, leans more onto the darker side of things is an anthology that I think a lot of people will have heard of called Never Whistle at Night, which is an anthology of short stories.
I feel like I've heard of that one.
Yeah, we have it.
Oh, okay. That's why.
Yeah. It's compiled by Shane Hawk and Theodore C. Van Alst Jr. This is a compilation of dark fiction short stories by a myriad of Indigenous authors across North America as a whole. There are some Canadian contributors in there as well, though. And it does actually have a sequel, if I'm not mistaken, that's coming out this month, or maybe has already come out, I believe, for a second round. So those are all things, you know, if ever you want to pick up a new book or something and read about some stuff like that, there are a ton of really great books by Indigenous authors as well that really speak to like a lot of what's covered throughout the course of this film as well, which is great.
Yeah. Hey, look at that. Super informative and book selection.
I'm giving you a lesson at the end of this.
That's awesome, man.
Anyway, that'll be us for this week, basically. And then heading into next week, Obsession comes out next week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. I think like that one's going to be cuckoo nuts bananas. But also congratulations to Curry Barker from, you know, being able to pick all that up from YouTube success all the way to this.
I know, that's incredible.
Which is incredible. Now he's been given a new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie to work on. Jesus Christ. Anyway, wow. So really looking forward to that one. I think that one's going to be really great. So we're checking that out next week, and then we'll be doing a review for it.
That's right.
All right. follow us on all of our socials, as mentioned, per usual, at Gravetone
Pod.
Sorry. I was like, wait, am I missing it? The Gravetone Pod. Check out the website at gravetonepod.com. We will have, obviously, that's it, all of the show notes linked from all of the episodes, including this one, which, as I mentioned, we'll have the links if you want to check anything else out. But until next week, guys, stay scared and stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.